Welcome to St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations, a podcast featuring members of the St. Mark's Cathedral community in Seattle, Washington. These interviews feature lives of faith and adventure, service and connection. Here's our host, Michael Pereira.
In the fall of 2018, Russ Crosby, Rachel McNary, and Elizabeth Hawkins asked a question, and a lot of people answered. And this was the start of Questioning Together, a series that the three of them put together for the 20s and 30s and the young adults of St. Mark's. And tonight, we are here to talk with Russ, Rachel, and Elizabeth about what Questioning Together is, how it started, and what it means for this cathedral community. So, Russ, Rachel, and Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Just to begin, I'd like to pull back a little bit and ask you how you found St. Mark's and how this became your church. And we can go in whichever order you want to answer that question.
Well, this is Elizabeth. Thanks so much for having us. And I am a cradle Episcopalian and grew up in the Seattle area. I came to Compline services as a teenager. And after college, when I moved back, I visited a few different churches, but quickly settled on St. Mark's. And over the last dozen years or so, I've had varying levels of involvement. And it's been about the last year or so that I've become more involved. And part of that has been coming together with Russ and Rachel to form this group.
And this is Rachel. I also first came to attend Compline on a date. And then I returned as a parishioner in the fall of 2016. I'd seen some posts on social media about some of the things that St. Mark's had done in response to events. The thing in particular was the Pulse nightclub shooting that St. Mark's participated in a march in response to that.
And this is Russ Crosby, and I came to St. Mark's with Rachel and for the first time in 2016, November of 2016. But I also am a cradle Episcopalian, and so was familiar with Episcopal services and the cathedral.
What is Questioning Together?
It's a group for young adults, people in their 20s and 30s, where we pose a question and then we have a discussion around that question.
What kind of questions have you asked so far?
Well, we've tried to select questions, frankly, that are interesting to us, that we would like to discuss, and questions that that don't have a clear answer, that might bring together a lot of different perspectives that we're wrestling with. Some of the questions we've asked so far have been, where is God when bad things happen? Another one was, do you identify as a Christian, and what does that word mean to you? We had another discussion around, what is sin and what is forgiveness? And the fourth question we had was the most recent one. Do you remember?
Gosh.
Just had this conversation.
I know, we did.
What challenges and strengths?
Oh, yes. What challenges and what strengthens your faith? Which was an excellent conversation.
You know, I think we started the idea of the group questioning together because they're questions that are sort of deeper spiritual questions of faith and really sort of philosophical questions that the idea being that you don't often have an opportunity to engage in that sort of deeper level of conversation with people, especially when you're busy or even a church, really. You go to church and you have coffee hour, which is not the time for deep spiritual questions, really. And I think people in their 20s and 30s are busy, and Seattle's a very secular city, so an opportunity to have those kind of questions was something that we were interested in, the three of us, and so we thought maybe other people would be too.
And I think it's an important to emphasize that we really started this group because the three of us were interested, and we thought it might just be the three of us showing up for these meetings. We had no idea that we would have the amount of turnout that we've had, and it's wonderful. It's been great to engage with so many of our fellow parishioners, but it really started from just a conversation that we had.
So trace the timeline for me. So the three of you got together and you said, it'll be really cool if we started talking about this stuff, these really deep, difficult questions. What was the next step from that?
Well, it started because we were having dinner at Canon Doherty's house, and there had been a conversation about what do the people in the 20s and 30s group want to have happen next. And so we were kicking around ideas about what that might be. I think that was in
August.
No, it was in May.
May, you're right.
So we got to talking about what we were enjoying and what we were reading and what questions were arising from that. And I think, Elizabeth, you're the one who said that you wanted to have a group where you could discuss these things. And I think Jennifer really picked up on that and said, that's great. I want to support that. Let me help you make a structure for that.
And then after that initial meeting, we went out for brunch down the street at Deluxe after a service. I can't remember exactly when that was. And we had done some emailing, and a lot of the planning went over email, but I remember we sat down that one day and really hammered out some of the things we were interested in discussing and some of the logistics, and made a little plan for who would do what.
Yeah, we made a little structure. We decided things like, when is a good time to meet? How frequently should they happen? And we really decided, okay, well, I remember we said, oh, well, we'll do maybe 3 months. We'll do it once in a month, because more frequently seemed not realistic. People wouldn't show up, and less frequently seemed like it would be difficult to form a group. We chose 7:30 because that was a time when it is easier for all of us to get someplace after work. We did a weeknight. And we decided that we would have dinner and a discussion. And I actually think the dinner and discussion part has, I think the dinner has really been, made it more successful. Mm-hmm. I think sharing a meal together, I think it loosens people up. It helps connect you because you're sharing something. Yeah. It sort of creates a sort of more trusting environment for people. And also it encourages people to come, frankly.
Well, it's just nice on a practical level not having to worry about stopping to pick up something to eat or planning ahead. And the clergy have been very generous and gracious with feeding us each month. We also talked about where to have the meetings, and we decided to have them here at the cathedral because everyone's familiar with this location. There's plenty of parking, and in fact, the one night that we had the lowest turnout, I think, was a night when there was a concert at the cathedral and parking was scarce. We still had, I don't know, 11 or so people that night, but that was one consideration. And I think that those practical considerations of what would work well for us seem to work well for others too.
So you have this plan of the logistics of when and where and food being provided. You had the interest on the three of you. You had support from the clergy. And of course, you had the topic of conversation. The first one was, where is God when bad things happen? And you were ready for it just to be the three of you. Walk me through, as best as you can remember, walk me through what that first questioning together was like.
It was really exciting. I really enjoyed to welcome new people. And so it was really exciting for me that there was a lot of people that I hadn't seen before, that I hadn't met, and that I was part of something that I felt proud to welcome people into. I was really excited about how much people shared, and that there was, that we went right up to the hour. And that people continue talking afterwards. There was a lot of energy. I was shocked that there were so many people who were interested and really excited about it.
Why that sense of pride and surprise?
Well, it's always fun to have something, to make something that people enjoy. So even though I was not by any means solely responsible for it, I thought, yeah, like I am doing something that people are interested in. And I, because I hadn't connected a lot with other people in the group, I didn't know that other people were interested in that as well.
I think we were all just shocked by how many people turned out, and it was exciting to see people wanting to join in this conversation that we...
The first one, there were 25 people, yeah. I think. I think there might have even been more because some people came late. I mean, there was a huge turnout.
We had to keep like adding chairs and pushing tables together to fit more people because we hadn't planned for that many. Luckily, there was enough food.
It's been nice also to see that people return too, mm-hmm. You know? I think that's nice. I was surprised that so many people came because I've gone to several events at St. Mark's and I haven't seen so many young people at those events. And so I think I was surprised, you know, I thought, oh, I wonder how many people are able to come out or interested in coming out, you know, in terms of extracurricular things. People have busy lives and mm-hmm. So.
Well, and it wasn't exactly a light topic. You know, the first topic was where is God when bad things happen? And it's something that I've wrestled with a lot. And but yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised to see how many people wanted to show up and talk about the hard stuff. I was also really impressed from the first meeting how well the discussions have gone. People have been very, it hasn't been contentious at all, even though we're talking about difficult topics and people really making space for each other. And I think at the very first meeting, every single person, more than 25 people, weighed in at least once. Mm-hmm. And that was really great to see that with relatively minimal facilitation, the conversation had a life of its own and that everyone who was there seemed engaged.
That was a really, as you said, Elizabeth, a really big topic to introduce for the first time this was getting off the ground. I'm curious why you didn't play it safer. What was the drive behind that ambition to say, this is the first time we're doing it. Maybe we'll get 100 people. Maybe it's just going to be the three of us. But we are going to go right for the jugular. Why that?
Because we were interested in the question.
Mm-hmm. Also, why do something if it doesn't matter? And that question really matters.
Yeah. And I think, as Russ said, you know, we can all try to make small talk at coffee hour. But I know for me, I don't come to church looking to make new superficial friendships. We're all busy. So coming and really having this conversation that we couldn't have anywhere else, it was important, at least to me.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things also that if people are going to be in a religious setting, it's a question they've had to wrestle mm-hmm. with. Mm-hmm. Because do you believe in God is almost always followed up by is God good and allows that and can't stop bad things from happening, or is God bad and doesn't care that bad things happen? And so I think it's really, where is God when bad things happen is sort of the price of admission for being in a religious setting.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know what I wonder also now that we're having the conversation about it is that I think a lot of times, like if you have been, my experience is that older people in their 70s and 80s, these questions there are like they've made their peace with that answer. They've lived long lives and had a great opportunity to sort of wrestle with what is this bad thing that has happened? How am I going to manage it? How am I going to deal with it? All of that. But I think when you're starting out in adulthood, at least I'll speak for myself, like I have not had the opportunity to develop the sort of peace and sort of confidence in knowing the answer to that question, or even the confidence in not having the answer that I think some people have. And I think that's something that maybe other folks in their 20s and 30s. I think if there's an interest in that question, particularly among younger people.
I think that the first two questions we had, which was where is God when bad things happen, and then how do you feel about identifying as a Christian, are also at the forefront of many of our minds given the current political moment. And I don't know how much we want to get into it here, but I think many of us in the who are coming to these meetings are people who've either started coming to church since late 2016 or have come back to church since that election, and who are wrestling with public Christianity and how that plays out in politics, and also feeling some real pain around what's been happening in different parts of our society. So I think that was also one of the things that made those questions seem so pressing.
Well, that answers one of the questions I had, which was, why are these topics that you're bringing up important to us as Christians, important to us as a community? But it also does make me wonder where the inspiration for the other topics have come up. So we mentioned the two of them. Where is God when bad things happen? Do you call yourself a Christian or identify as a Christian? And then the other ones that we've discussed have been, what is sin? What challenges and what strengthens your faith? So can you talk about those questions? How did those arise as topics?
We asked the group to give suggestions for the topics. And so those last two, I believe, came from group suggestions. Mm-hmm. And so it's been, so we've kind of taken concepts and worked with them to try to pose a question that we think is interesting. So that's why those. Mm-hmm. And like Elizabeth said earlier, to have the questions be open-ended, something with not a right or wrong answer, but still personal enough that it's meaningful.
One of the things that I think has been really nice is to watch people in the group sort of step into different leadership roles within the group context. So, like, we have a priest come and be there, and they've been, I appreciate the contributions that they make when they're there, and they're all individuals, and I have different personalities, and I appreciate that. But it's been nice for me to see other people step up and do the opening and closing prayers, and I guess that in particular, and to watch sort of that development has been an interesting part of the group for me.
Mm-hmm.
What does it say when we have a group of really diverse people there wrestling with a very difficult topic, but you've created a space where they feel empowered enough to answer these questions with complete and incredible honesty and to guide the discussion in ways that surprise us? And it's not to say that we have a framework for exactly how the topic will go, but remembering, for example, the last one that we were at, the challenges, what challenges and strengthens our faith. I remember we went down a really interesting path talking about the confession. So what does it say that we've created this space? What are we doing right? Excuse me, what are you doing right? That people from these incredibly diverse backgrounds, people wrestling with these questions on many different levels, are stepping up to this, where nobody's being passive about it.
Well, I think you can say what we're doing right, because you've come to, I think, all of the all of the meetings, and it's been great to have you there.
Yeah, I'm actually more interested in the people who come and hearing them interviewed than hearing them.
I know.
We know why we go. I have
right.
no idea why they're coming.
Right.
Honestly.
Agreed.
So, Michael, why do you come?
Yeah.
Oh, this has never happened before. Tables have never been turned.
Yeah.
So as Elizabeth said, I've attended all of these, all four, five, I forget the number now. What I appreciate, I think, is in a way connects to something that Russell said a little while ago, that in a city like Seattle, identifying as a Christian, and this is one of the reasons that particular question came up, I think, identifying as a Christian is not the easiest thing to do. It's not always a given, as it is in some other parts of the country, and as it was maybe a generation ago. Another group of Episcopalians I meet with, we joked about this, that they rarely say they have church on Sunday. They always say they have an appointment or an engagement on Sunday. This is not even at St. Mark's, it's at another church. So for me, it's fascinating that to get a group of people in their 20s, in their 30s, who are very in tune with what the city is like, the best and the worst of the city, where calling yourself a Christian is very kind of puts you as an outsider, that they can still come to this place and they can say, yes, they identify as a Christian, or no, they don't, but they have incredibly complicated reasons for whatever response they give. And for me, I like that. I like that we can get very nuanced. We can get down in the trenches and say, sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes, whether it's the question about calling yourself a Christian, what sin is, where we think God is when terrible things happen, the absolute range of responses that we've gotten from people who are 100% sure of what they believe in to people who say they have no idea, but they want to hear what other people say. They want to say they have no idea. For me, that's been an incredible part of this questioning together project. That, as you said, Elizabeth, there are no easy answers. There are no, maybe for some of these questions, there are no answers at all in terms of yes or no, in terms of black and white, in terms of right or wrong. But what you've done is created something that people will still come to. And the food is probably a big part of it.
Well, I think one of the important things that's not what are we doing right, but we're Episcopalians. And I've only been an Episcopalian for less than a year. So I was raised Pentecostal. So the idea of questioning at all is, I think it's a proud part of the Episcopalian tradition and not part of a lot of other Christian traditions. So that in itself makes the space for us to do this and for it to be okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the dean was our clergy representative, when we asked, do you call yourself a Christian? Yeah. I thought, there's about a 5% chance I'm going to be thrown out as a heretic and have my confirmation card torn up. I mean, not to that extent, but really the fact that people were able to be honest and discuss that, not just in front of a priest, but in front of the dean, I thought was really spoke to the openness of the Episcopal Church in this community in particular.
I completely agree. I was also thinking about that when you were talking and about how remarkable it is to have that support from the institution and to have the safety to really explore that. And I think when you asked about why the conversations sometimes veer off in unexpected directions and why they're so nuanced, I think that is a big part of the reason that people do feel comfortable coming to St. Mark's and being honest about how they feel and not thinking they just need to reiterate a party line.
You mentioned the support from the clergy. How did that come about and what does that look like?
Well, it began with a conversation we had at Canon Doherty's house. There was a 20s and 30s dinner. They call it, I think, dinner at the deanery, though it was at her house, their house. So when we were tossing around the ideas, she was there and supportive of our idea. After the first, she was our representative, clergy representative, for the first meeting, and it was so popular, and we'd intended to do a couple more anyway, they were on the calendar, but it was so popular that I think she reported, my guess is that she reported back to the clergy, and then they all agreed to take a week.
Well, I think even before the first meeting, she said something about how the other clergy were also excited about the idea. Yeah. But I think you're right that she really spearheaded it. And then so far they've rotated through. I don't know, are we going to have a repeat appearance next time?
Yeah, we're really making it up as we go along.
Yeah. But so far we've had a different member of clergy each time. And they've provided the food for dinner. And for the most part, they've been kind of in the background, you know, really just offering their presence and support. And we've asked them some questions as things have come up. And sometimes they've offered ideas or follow-up questions as things have gone along, but I think they've really made an effort to let it be led and sort of take on a life of its own and just to be there for support rather than coming in and directing how it should go.
Because we talked about a couple different ways of doing it, and not having a clergy representative was on the table at some point, but we decided that we'd rather have somebody there. I think it's good to know there's somebody with the experience, the knowledge, the wisdom. Mm-hmm. If something, you know, just to have them there to offer all of that, because there are hard topics, and you don't know what might come up.
But it's a remarkable balance that has been found where their support is there. They're obviously, their presence is there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the conversation is led by the three of you or somebody in that group who feels moved to lead whatever direction the topic goes in. And then to the point that Elizabeth and Rachel brought up, it's, I think, different from other traditions and denominations where the conversation is always going to be led by the, quote, leader. And then to your point, Rachel, this is, if we're doing this right, it's very much in our tradition of questioning, very much in our tradition of using reason to maybe not directly answer these questions, but to advance our understanding of the theological implications behind them.
But I would say it's not just reason. I mean, this came up in our first group, that there's many ways of knowing. And you may say a discussion is reason, but we don't just talk about that. We talk about our experiences, our emotions, our bodies, our histories. So all of that comes into play in answering the questions together.
Absolutely. And I think that is, as Rachel and Michael both said, very much a part of the Episcopal tradition to bring in reason, experience, the wisdom of the church, and texts, that all of those are part of how we know God and how we engage with our religion.
What's next for questioning together?
Well, in fact, we were just finalizing our question for January, and I think it's going to be, how do you know God, or what do you know of God, and how do you know? Is that how it was?
Yeah. You're going to have fun with that.
You should see the barrels of ink spilled over how to phrase the questions.
I'm sure there's a story there, too, because these are huge topics. I mean, obviously, we've covered that, but to finally nail down, this is the sentence, this is the question, whatever, that's got to go through so many versions before you say, okay, this is as close as we can get.
Well, like this one came from the conversation that we had in the last meet group. We talked a lot, people, you alluded to, there was a lot of conversation and energy around confession. There was conversation about prayer and liturgy and how those things interact with faith. And really, we, in our conversations, what we did is we sort of took all those ideas and thought, okay, well, what are those things getting at? Those questions and that energy getting at? And that's, we sort of landed on, those are ways that we know God. So how do you know God? And I don't remember the, but you know, that's how we landed on, okay, well, this is a general topic that will sort of be, sort of get at what's underneath those questions. Because I think sometimes you can get, and honestly, Rachel and Elizabeth have done the lion's share of the choosing of the questions and the wording of it. I think they have both done excellent work at getting at what is the thing underneath, the interesting topic underneath, and phrasing it in a way that opens people up to sort of explore those ideas and be vulnerable and share things that are personal so that the conversation can take shape. Because I think sometimes there's a temptation to really narrow down on a question.
Yeah.
And if you get too narrow, I think there's an answer suddenly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there, like somebody has a really clear idea about what the answer is, that can create conflict, and it can also close down the question and the conversation. And both of them have done a really excellent job, in my opinion, of working to create questions that open conversation and open people's hearts and open
the door to meaningful conversation. So if you want to know what I think we're doing right, I think that is really the thing that they're doing right. So
how do you do that, Elizabeth and Rachel? How do you open it up?
I really think it's Rachel that does that. I mean,
we're just going to keep going round and round on this.
I mean, we've definitely batted around a lot of ideas, but I think you're the one who's ended up shaping the final question of a lot of them. I think you have done an excellent job. Maybe you could say a little bit about your approach.
Thanks for saying that. Well, I'm a professional question asker. I'm a therapist, so I think a lot about how to, as an attorney, you answer. What is the thing
it's
you do?
True.
Ask a lot of questions.
It's true. There's a difference between cross-examining someone and coming up with a really good discussion question with a lot of nuance.
Wow.
What do you think sin is?
Although monthly interrogations of Elizabeth could also be fun.
A new series.
It'll be hilarious if this makes the cut.
Yeah,
I know. Well, it totally
will. It'll be
out the outtakes.
It totally will.
I'm not committing to that.
But Rachel, how do you do it?
I think that's exactly it. It's all day, every day, I'm thinking of how to ask questions in just the way we've talked about doing it, open-ended in a way that will open people up in ways that I don't expect. So it's, I think, a lot about being careful not to ask in such a way that I think I know the answer or that will lead in a particular way. And if it's a really good question, the person answering it will be surprised by the answer too. Mm-hmm. I've also been doing just a ton of theological reading. And so that has informed my perspective. And I think being a new Episcopalian too, I mean, I just have a ton of questions. You know, why are they wearing that? Why are they standing there? Why is there a new cloth on the altar? Why are we standing now? Why are we singing this song? You know, and they don't all have answers. But it's, I think being new has put me in a real questioning space.
Can you let us in on some of the theology you've been reading?
What haven't I been reading? I've been reading, of course, Marcus Borg, Joan Chittister, Kathleen Norris, Elaine Pagels, Cynthia Bourgeau. I'd really have to look at my list. There's so many.
Well, I think actually at that dinner at Canon Doherty's house, that was how we started chatting, was that somehow someone mentioned reading, and then we started comparing the books we'd been reading. And then that led to starting this group.
A lot of contemplative, Thomas Keating, Mirabai Starr, it just goes on. It's been intense.
It's incredible how we were all at that dinner at Canon Doherty's house. There was no concept of this. I mean, I'm sure the idea was floating around somewhere, but the idea that from that would come this incredible series that you put together, that was abstract. It was miles away. And now it's reality. It is something that I know I look forward to, and I will definitely speak for us, many other people. They also look forward to it, to socializing, to seeing our friends, to catching up, but to talk about the things that in some ways keep us up at night. Like you said, Rachel, this is the price of admission. If we are serious about what we believe in, if we take this to heart, then that means we have to expose ourselves to these questions. We cannot afford to keep them at bay and say, I'm not going to think about that. For me, that's selling myself short. That's selling this entire framework of belief short. And to think that this all, not to say that it all came from that one conversation at Canon Doherty's house, but that was a turning point in this incredible, fantastic series that has led us here.
Honestly, I'm embarrassed by the adjectives that you're using. I mean, I think it's a good group. You know, I think it's a good group, and I'm pleased to be, you know, participating in it. And I'm glad that it's speaking to you and so many people. But honestly, it's really
it's just sort of a nice thing to get together and do. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't think,
I feel like it's like, oh, like a little fiddle music, not a symphony.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, that's nice. It's pleasant. I enjoy music, but it's not like, oh my God, that bowled me over.
Well, and I think that what I'm really interested in, and like you said, Rachel, you know, to hear from other people, because it sounds like that our group is getting such a great response. And I think all of us were bowled over by how enthusiastic it was. And I'm very grateful for and appreciative of the group. It's been wonderful for me, but I don't know, you know, what it is about it that's really sparking so much enthusiasm. And
this
is only on audio, but everybody else just threw up their hands too. Yeah. So, but I think I'm really grateful for the space that St. Mark's and the clergy have offered to facilitate this becoming a reality, and that we could just kind of come to them with saying, this is what we want to do. And
yeah, I've been very appreciative of that. I think I appreciate the support and the space, and I'm glad that people are coming. It's nice when they plug it. And
Steve Thomason, whenever he does the announcements, he always jokes that we always pick the easy questions, quote unquote easy, like, you know, what is sin, or where is God when terrible things happen? So I think there's definitely that appreciation that we're not, to the points that we made earlier, we're not playing it safe either. These are not softball questions. And for me, I know these topics ring in my head days afterwards. Days after we have our dinner and discussion, I find myself thinking about what other people have said, or thinking, you know, why didn't I say this? Or I really could have explained that better. And for me, that's how I know, that's how I feel the staying power of this. This is not something that I experience and I walk away with looking for, forgetting about it. But the conversations that we're having are so rich and full that I keep going back to them day after day. And I can even remember all the way back to the first question that we did, where is God when terrible things happen? I remember not the whole thing, but the points that I brought up, the points that people I know mentioned, even people I'd never seen before, people who don't come to St. Mark's, they still felt called to say, maybe I'm not a Christian, but this is my thought on where God is when everything goes wrong. Again, I think we could be here all night to try and quantify and qualify the great thing that has come out through questioning together. But at the risk of embarrassing Russ again, I would say you guys have started something amazing. And it is, for me, a highlight of the week and the month when it comes up to know that, yes, I'm going to socialize with my friends again, but we are going to talk about something that I don't always talk about, that I cannot talk about with my other friends. But if I come to this group and if I say, I don't know, or I don't like how I feel about this, that somebody in that room is going to say, yeah, I kind of get what you mean. In a religious context, it's a special feeling. It's not something that we can always find, but against all odds, in some ways, you've created a place where we can't find that. I do want to finish with that. So Elizabeth, Rachel, and Russ, thank you so much for the work you've done with Questioning Together, for the people who have felt like they do have a place to talk about this, so they do have a place to be open and to be accepted for their questions and for their answers. Thank you for creating that, and thank you for letting us into what this has been like. I know there are many people at St. Mark's who are very grateful for what you've done, and I'm one of them. So thank you so much for that.
Thanks for having us.
We look forward to seeing you the first Monday of January for our next conversation.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. Our music was performed by Michael Kleinschmidt on the Flintrop organ at St. Mark's. Michael Pereira and Andrew Himes produced the podcast, and we hope you'll visit stmarks.org. So long.